Welcome back once again to Chronology, Episode 3. My name is David Thacker. That guy over there, that's Neil Trauma. Say hi, Neil.
Hi, Neil.
We are both fathers, so look forward to a lot of dad jokes in the near future. An episode-by-episode recap of WWF's Monday Night Raw. This time, Episode 3. Episode 3. From January 25th, 1993, coming at you one more time from the Grand Ballroom at Manhattan Center. But we start the show thinking to ourselves, is this just a continuation of what happened last week? Because that tow truck bit, I don't think Vince McMahon forked out for a tow truck rental 2 weeks in a row, did he?
He did not, Dave. In fact, this show was recorded. This is taped. We are already done with weekly live Raws here in Episode 3. This show was taped right after last week's Raw. So this was all one shot in New York City, which does make a lot of sense because that meant Vince also didn't have to fly the crew in from Sacramento on 24 hours notice because last night was the Royal Rumble in Sacramento, California. But yeah, this was actually taped last week. So only one rental on the old ledger sheet for Vince McMahon.
Is there any backstory from the Royal Rumble that we need to know before we just sort of find our way moving into the episode?
Not necessarily. I did bite the bullet and watch the entire 1993 Royal Rumble before we recorded. You don't really have to bend my arm to get me to watch early 90s WWF pay-per-views, but I will admit that Royal Rumble 93 is a slight bit of a slog. I'll hit on the results quick just so everybody's on the same page of where we're at in history here. Steiners beat the Beverly Brothers in the opener. Shawn Michaels retains the Intercontinental title against Marty Jannetty. The question of whose corner will Sherry be in was kind of sort of answered. She did turn on Shawn during the match. She tried to hit him with a shoe, the weapon of choice of Sherry Martel, but she missed, hit Marty, and it led to Shawn retaining the IC title. And before we're done recording the show today, I should also mention what happens to Marty Jannetty, but we can hit on that later on. Bam Bam Bigelow beat the Big Boss Man. Bret Hart retained the world championship against Razor Ramon, and it was Yokozuna who emerged victorious in the Royal Rumble match. He threw out the Macho Man at the end of the match to win, and other highlights included Bob Backlund setting the all-time length record in the Royal Rumble, even though he lost, and the debut of a man named the Giant Gonzalez, who we will also talk about later on in the show.
Okay, I feel like I don't even need to watch that Royal Rumble now. Thank you for saving me the time and trouble. We start the show with Repo Man pulling up in the tow truck with Macho Man's hat once again, and that is indeed our first match, running into the building. The Repo Man, just with onlookers going, what is happening? What's going on? Who is that man? Why is he running into that building? And I felt like at that moment, I was those people. I understood exactly what was happening, and I still was confused as to why I was watching this happening.
Well, imagine the scene if you actually are a New Yorker here. You're just out on a Monday night in 1993, and you see this crazy guy in a mask holding a ridiculous multicolored hat. He runs into a tow truck as cameras and I presume a boom mic guy and whatever other technical support there needs to be. Like, imagine you don't know there's wrestling being recorded inside the building and you see that happen. Then the tow truck just pulls around the block and returns to the front of the building. And then the crazy mask guy with the hat jumps out of the tow truck and runs back into the Manhattan Center. Just imagine how you would feel watching this scene unfold in real life.
I guess you'd turn to your friend and go, only in New York, right? And then carry on with your daily life.
You're probably right.
The original Raw music, I love it so much. It's that cheesy, ultra weird, like super highlight package music with a lot of saxophone that eventually, I guess, would segue into Val Venus's music. But we start the show with Bobby the Brain Heenan and Vince McMahon and Rob Bartlett all standing next to each other, even though Rob Bartlett, our favorite of this show, was doing everything he could to antagonize Bobby the Brain Heenan for the last couple of weeks. So I guess that just sort of quickly went in everyone's ear and out the other, and we'll never speak
well,
of it again.
Well, they're kind of at each other's throats a little bit. I mean, I think it's obvious that Heenan hates Rob Bartlett both in storyline and in real life. And I will give Rob Bartlett credit, and we'll get to this later on. But, I mean, he was actually probably the best Rob Bartlett on this show. He is slightly improving. Like, he was much better here than he was in the first episode. He kept the terrible impressions to a minimum. And in fact, he did a Randy Savage impression in the opening match that was actually pretty spot on. So I'm actually going to give Bartlett credit that of all the shows we've seen him on, he was the best in this one. Now, it's a low, low bar to cross, but he was better in this one than he's been.
Fair enough. Match one, Repo Man versus Randy Savage. They went about 13 minutes in the Battle of the Repossessed Hat. It wasn't a bad match. It was actually a pretty good match. Randy doing Randy magic and Repo Man putting him over pretty good and a lot of back and forth. And I got to tell you, it's as far as matches go, it was a good match. Was the storyline worth it? No. Were we all better off because this match happened? No. Is this going to go down in wrestling history? No. But it was a pretty good match.
Yeah, it was fun. And I mean, this is pretty much it for the Repo Man having any kind of impact in the WWF. He's basically done. I think we see him a few more times, but he's basically done after this match anyway. I was a little bit disappointed, though, because they planted the seeds on last week's show for this to actually make sense. Because Randy Savage had feuded with Ric Flair for almost all of 1992. And since they were building to the Perfect Flair match, the Loser Leaves Town match, and Savage had been aligned with Perfect at the end of 92, they actually planted the seeds on last week's show that Randy Savage said that he thinks Bobby Heenan might have put Repo Man up to attacking him. And I thought the storyline was supposed to be that Repo Man was going to take out Savage so that he couldn't help Perfect win the match. But then they don't mention that really at all here, and it doesn't play into the main event at all. So this really is pointless. I guess I gave them too much credit when I thought it was going to have a point, but I think it was just an excuse to build up a match last week and deliver on it this week. And in that regard, it did the trick. Savage is great. The match was fine.
Fair enough. And even though this match won't last in wrestling history, it was at a key point in American history. January 25th, 1993, just a couple of days after Bill Clinton took the oath of office, they made Hillary Clinton and Tipper Gore references and what they wore to the balls. Someone busted out a Rush Limbaugh impression when Rush was actually relevant in the early 90s. And all in all, it was very clearly, even though it was a taped match, it was timestamped. So even back then, it's not like this was just an evergreen, we're going to just have a standalone episode. They were making it very clear that they were going to continue with the trend of being, you know, live, raw, and uncensored, or at least very clearly in the moment of the
uncooked, day. Uncut, uncensored. Hey, what are the odds, dude, that we'd be watching this show? I guess we're going to timestamp it ourselves here. We're watching this in real life and recording this podcast less than 24 hours. We're pretty much 24 hours to the minute of the Joe Biden inauguration here in the year 2021. And what are the odds that they would be talking about what people wore to the inaugural balls when the only thing you can find on the internet today is memes about Bernie Sanders' preposterous mittens that he wore to the inauguration in real life? What are the odds of that?
Let's be clear. Bernie Sanders wearing like a typical L.L. Bean jacket and ugly knit mittens. He's catching flack for it, but if he was getting inaugurated, he would be wearing that same outfit to his own inauguration.
See, I don't see it as flack. I think that's awesome. You cannot tell me that those mittens are not going to like sell out everywhere that they're sold because of this.
They can't, because it's one woman that made them. The backstory on the mittens was that it's one woman who presented them as a gift, and she was as shocked as everyone else that he was actually wearing them from place
to place. That is absolutely outstanding.
But she is an American hero, that woman. All right, Randy Savage ended the match, won his hat back, who saw that coming, with a flying elbow from the top rope. Again, a pretty good match all in all, but unless you have anything else to add to Macho and Repo, we can move
on. Yeah, we can move on from something awesome, Bernie Sanders mittens, to something awful, the Brooklyn Brawler versus Kamala.
Okay, Brooklyn Brawler and Kamala. I the only thing that I really remember about this match, which was a really short match, was this crowd screaming at Kamala, "You're a man," and Kamala slapping his stomach like 600 times. That's all.
Yeah, I mean, this whole Kamala thing is terrible. I don't think, you know, before we recorded, I thought we were going to spend a lot of time really like ragging on how terrible this is. I mean, at its worst, it's the absolute dirt worst, embarrassing, racist terribleness of professional wrestling. But I don't even think we need to drive that point home. I think anyone watching this right now knows how terrible it was. I will say, confession, that I think the gimmick of like a, you know, barbaric headhunter from the jungle isn't that terrible in wrestling. Like, in the cartoonish world of wrestling, it can work. Like, we'll see the head shrinkers throughout a lot of 93, and that gimmick works. This one doesn't work because when you make him a baby face, he needs to somehow become, I don't know if intelligent is the right word. The point is, what they're doing with this gimmick is they literally are telling you that Kamala is subhuman, and he's so stupid that even though he's been a wrestler for like a decade, he doesn't even know how to pin a guy. I mean, come on.
In order to build him up, they literally have to make him, like, objectively bash him in every sense and degrade him and make him less than human. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I was having a hard time putting my finger on exactly why this match bothered me besides the obvious.
I mean, the parts of the gimmick that are that you could look at and say are racist, like, you could make them not that racist. There's like ways that you can justify it, but, you know, having the crowd chant "you are a man," that is not the way to get this gimmick to work. But hey, you know what? Let's point this out, because, you know, for new listeners to the podcast, the shtick here is that Dave is the most casual of casual wrestling fans, and I'm the guy that's seen these shows a zillion times. So Dave, I'm going to ask you a question that our listeners may or may not know the answer to. Do you get the inside joke here of this match? The kind of wink, wink, nudge, nudge to inside fans?
I really don't. If there's any subtlety in this match whatsoever, it's totally lost on
Kamala me. Was managed by Harvey Whippleman and his trainer, Kim Chi. Now, the Kim Chi gimmick through the years has passed to a number of people. It's just a masked guy that kind of wears like the man in the yellow hat from the Curious George books. But he's Kamala's trainer, right? Well, in the WWF during this 1992 run, that trainer was played by Steve Lombardi, who is also the Brooklyn Brawler. So this is Kamala versus Kim Chi, except instead of wearing the Kim Chi outfit, he's wearing the Brooklyn Brawler outfit tonight.
It boggles my mind that someone's head can be full of this information, and I'm in awe.
I try.
Once again, I am in awe.
Hey, speaking of Whippleman, is it Royal Rumble report time?
They talked about him a lot in the middle of the match, because the Royal Rumble recap with the fabulous Mean Gene Okerlund, it set my heart aflutter for a number of reasons. The first being, not only did he recap the match, he encouraged you to buy the Royal Rumble on VHS in 2 weeks, and wrestling VHS tapes is really how I became a fan to begin with. I made my dad rent WrestleMania 7. That was the one with the Ultimate Warrior and Hulk Hogan, right?
That's 6.
6. I made him rent WrestleMania 6 like 14 times for me. And I'm sure my dad was thrilled to be watching the same wrestling VHS tape again and again and again. But Gene Okerlund recapping the Royal Rumble, slightly better than what you did. The thing that sticks out in my mind about this, as far as the results go, when Mean Gene says the line, "presumably setting up a championship match at WrestleMania, provided that Bret Hart retains the title between now and April," as if there was going to be some sort of title change between the Royal Rumble and WrestleMania when they're trying to build up a main event match.
You never know, Dave. You never know.
I guess the house shows still needed to sell out or whatever.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. Gene, I loved his. I loved his recap of the debut of Narcissus. I left this out of my Royal Rumble report. Bobby Heenan debuts Lex Luger in his new WWF gimmick as the narcissist Lex Luger, and Gene Okerlund hits the nail on the head, capturing my sentiments exactly on Lex Luger when he says, "Now, I'm not a big Lex Luger fan." The most backhanded compliment he could give. "I'm not a big Lex Luger fan, but his muscles sure looked good." It's about Lex Luger in a nutshell there.
Yeah, pretty much. He was sort of stiff in every match that he was in. But that said, the Royal Rumble report, always a highlight for me.
And hey, since, you know what, reports on shows, if they're a highlight for you, I got to mention this because your favorite topic was brought up one more time, the Headlock on Hunger show. It's finally here, Dave.
Yay.
This is the last time they're going to mention it because it happens in between this Raw and the next Raw that we're going to watch. So you've been really excited about this. You've been really into Headlock on Hunger. Do you want to know what happens on the show?
Yes, please.
Headlock on Hunger at Madison Square Garden saw the following matchups. Tito Santana pinned Skinner. Randy Savage pinned Ted DiBiase. Not a bad match there. Tatanka pinned Damian Demento. Bret Hart retained the world championship against Bam Bam Bigelow. Mr. Perfect defeated Ric Flair. The Head Shrinkers defeated the awesome tag team of Virgil and Jim Powers. Typhoon pinned the Berserker, a main event in any arena in the country. Razor Ramon pinned the Big Boss Man. The Undertaker pinned IRS. Rick and Scott Steiner defeated the Beverly Brothers. And in an epic main event, Bob Backlund defeated Intercontinental Champion Shawn Michaels via count out.
I was about to say that he couldn't possibly have pinned him, but that sounds like
the headlock has been placed on Hunger, Dave. But hey, you know what? It's all for a good cause. $100,000 to the Red Cross because of that show. So I guess we could say kudos WWF for that.
And congratulations to the Red Cross. Let's never speak of this again. So we go to our main event. It is quite the main event with two of the biggest names in the industry at that point and still to this day, kind of. We see Mr. Perfect and Ric Flair, the Nature Boy, in a Loser Leaves Town match, in an actual Loser Leaves Town match.
It was. This is it. This was Flair's last television appearance for the WWF until 2001. He was going out here. The story is that when Ric Flair left WCW in the first place to come to the WWF, Vince told him, you know, straight up man to man, if you're ever unhappy with your position and you ever want out, you can leave. I won't stop you. And he actually, amazingly, was true to his word. After Flair pretty much carried the promotion through early 92 into late 92, Vince made the decision that he was going to start pushing younger guys. And much like he did with Randy Savage, he was going to push Flair, you know, down the card and make him a little bit more of an upper mid card character. And Flair decided he still wanted to be a top guy. The door was open to come back to WCW. He asked for his release. He got it. And this is it. He does this match with Perfect. It's great. And then he leaves the WWF.
Well, what would happen if those two quote-unquote mid-card guys, as the younger guys were getting a push, wouldn't it have been more worthwhile to just have a couple of Macho Man Ric Flair matches and have Macho retire Ric Flair as opposed to Mr. Perfect? And nothing against Mr. Perfect, but it just seems like there could have been a bigger name that sent him home.
Well, yeah, but then again, Dave, you got to remember this. I mean, Savage is getting moved down the card too. So you want to give that rub to Mr. Perfect, who they were pushing here as a main event guy. So you have him beat Flair. And now, you know, he gets to be the guy who ran Ric Flair out of the WWF. In fact, I could argue that maybe it should have been an even younger guy, but that would have required more building up here, quite frankly. I mean, the feud was already there. That Perfect was the guy Flair was feuding with. So I think the pieces just all fell into place here. And probably on a personal level, you know, they had worked together. Perfect managed Flair through 91 and 92. So I think Flair probably was just happy to put on a great match with Perfect and, you know, put him over on the way out.
And it was a great match. It went on for quite a long time. There were a lot of great spots. There were a lot of great bumps. Ric Flair did wonderful Ric Flair stuff. Mr. Perfect was a good foil for him, got opened up in the middle of the match, got to see a little paint in the ring. But all in all, Ric Flair did the thing. He did the business. What's the phrase here that I'm looking for? Not did the job. That's the one, right?
Yeah. Did the job.
Did the job, went home, retired. And as far as matches go on early Raws, to me, this is the best one that we've seen in our three episodes.
And think about this, Dave, how much we raved last week about the Mr. Perfect Terry Taylor match, and then we loved that Ric Flair Tito Santana match. Remember that in real life, those happened about a half an hour before this one. So wow. Talk about great performances. Flair and Perfect put on those performances all in the same night. So kudos to those guys.
Yeah, seriously. Especially considering how much Ric Flair was still drinking at that point. To go back-to-back, incredible. So there it is, episode 3 of Monday Night Raw. And Neil, I have to ask you, what stands out in your mind? Who is your MVP?
Well, you know, this is a tough call here because the Flair Perfect match is so good. I feel like it's almost a tie that we want to give it to Flair and Perfect as MVPs of this show. But then I also double back on, let's not discount Bobby Heenan here. I mean, he does a great job on commentary pulling for Flair in the main event. He makes Rob Bartlett listenable throughout this show. And he really drives the point home that Bobby the Brain Heenan should have been the color commentator on Raw in the first place. So I'm almost tempted to give it to the Brain. Do we give it to Bobby Heenan, or should we just one last time, because we're not going to see him for so long, is the MVP Ric Flair?
It has to be, because it's our last chance for many, 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 many years.
You've talked me into it.
Ric Flair, our MVP for this week. Next week,
after that awesome match, Vince McMahon actually has the unmitigated gall going into the commercial to say, wait until you hear the match we have for you next week. So, Dave, tell them now, what match did Vince come up with that was, it's so big, it tops Flair and Mr. Perfect in a Loser Leaves Town match? What is it?
It is Typhoon versus Doink the Clown. And we know he's a clown because on the screen it says Typhoon versus Doink, and then in parentheses, the Clown. I can't. I love wrestling so much in spite of itself. This is an abuse.
I mean, that really, it really is why I love wrestling. I mean, it honestly is. I mean, I can't wait. There is no chance that the show next week's going to be even remotely good when the best thing they could think of to promote about it is Typhoon versus Doink. And I can't wait. I'm giddy with excitement. I might watch it as soon as we stop recording this show.
Going back to back, just like the Nature Boy and Mr. Flair.
Yes. My homage to Ric Flair and Mr. Perfect. That was a great Raw, by the way. I think that's the best of the three we've watched. They are getting better as they go on.
I entirely agree. That was Raw Episode 3. He's Neil Trauma. Any final thoughts, Neil, or should we just wrap this up and go watch Episode 4?
Yeah, let's wrap this up. I got to get to Typhoon versus Doink, the Clown.
He's Neil Trauma. Murder, She Wrote. Doink, the Clown. He's Neil Trauma. I'm Dave Thacker. Thanks for hanging out with us on Chronology. Until next week.
Take it easy.